In our study of the Gospel of Matthew, we are considering the parable of the marriage feast. The parable of the marriage feast was a parable which the Lord Jesus Christ told to instruct the Pharisees why it was he could not tell them by what authority he did what he did. He said the reason, of course, basically was that they were not able to comprehend, they were not able to understand, and so he told the parable. I say we are in the midst of discussing this parable. For the last two studies, we have read it together and then considered certain portions of it. And I would like for us to read the parable again today so that we might have very clear in our minds the story before we try to talk about it. So we read from Matthew chapter 22, verse 1, "And Jesus answered and spake unto them again by parables, and said, The kingdom of heaven is like unto a certain king which made a marriage for his son, and sent forth his servants to call them that were bidden to the wedding, and they would not come. Again he sent forth other servants, saying, Tell them which are bidden, Behold, I have prepared my dinner, my oxen, my fatlings are killed, and all things are ready, come unto the marriage. But they made light of it, and went their ways, one to his farm, another to his merchandise. And the remnant took his servants, and entreated them spitefully, and slew them. But when the king heard thereof, he was angry, and he sent forth his armies, and destroyed those murderers, and burned up their city. Then saith he to the servants, The wedding is ready, but they which were bidden were not worthy. Go ye therefore into the highways, and as many as ye shall find, bid to the marriage. So those servants went out into the highways, and gathered together all as many as they found, both bad and good, and the wedding was furnished with guests. And when the king came in to see the guests, he saw there a man which had not on a wedding garment. And he saith unto them, Friend, how camest thou in hither, not having on a wedding garment? And the man was speechless. Then said the king to the servants, Bind him hand and foot, and take him away, and cast him into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen." As we have studied this parable, we have identified the participants in the parable, what we might refer to as the actors in the drama. And then we have examined the progress of the parable, that is, the program of the parable, that is, a description of what is going to happen in the kingdom of heaven during this age in which we live. And, of course, that program consisted of a series of invitations. And we want to notice today the response to those invitations that were issued. And I think you will recognize from the reading of the Word, if you were listening reasonably closely, that all of the responses to the invitations were not the same. But they certainly were typical and are typical of human nature. And I might say, when the gospel invitation is presented, regardless of when and how, the responses to the gospel invitation are oftentimes very much the same as is described here in this parable, because human nature is what it is. The first response which was given to the messengers who went out, I am using the word unconcern to describe. The individuals who heard the invitation were unconcerned. They would not come. That this was not a momentary thing where they just could not immediately respond to the invitation is indicated by the word thello, which is used in the text. That word thello is translated by the words would not in our King James text. This is written in the imperfect tense in the original text, so that we could well read, they kept on not being willing to come. They heard the invitation. What was their response? They would not. Those words indicate unconcern, I say, because it wasn't a case of their saying, I would like to come, but I can't right this minute. It was a case of their being totally unconcerned with the message which brought by the servants who went out. Now, that response was followed by a worse one when the second group of messengers went out. And I have described that response, described there in verse 5, as a response of contempt and self-interest. For we read there in verse 5 that when the invitation was extended to them, they made light of it. They went their ways, one to his farm and another to his merchandise. They treated the invitation with contempt. In addition to their contempt, they said, "We have farms to farm and stores to keep, and we can't be bothered with this invitation." First the statement, they made light of it, and then giving such foolish excuses as they did. Now, I trust you are able to notice a progression, a deterioration of the condition of the heart of man when God continues to call and man continues to turn a deaf ear. You will notice in verse 6 that when the next group of messengers went out, there was absolute rebellion against the invitation. The remnant who had not expressed themselves in some other way took his servants and killed them, used them despitefully, and slew them. This was an open rebellion against God. Because they did this sort of thing, they were individuals whom God, as we're going to see in our discussion, had to deal with very, very sorely. There was one other response to the invitation. It was not a group response. It was an individual response. And I have described that response as a response of self-righteousness. In verse 11, when the king came in to see the guests, he saw there a man who did not have on a wedding garment. You may say, "Well now, I don't see anything there about self-righteousness." Why do you say that this was a response of self-righteousness? The man did respond, didn't he? Yes, he did. He did indeed respond, but he did not come properly. He did not come properly attired, and it was a deliberate act or decision on his part. You say, perhaps the man did not have the right kind of clothes to come, but that wouldn't be true if you understand the custom of the day. That this was a deliberate act on the part of the man is indicated in the Greek by the phrase "not having a wedding garment." This phrase, literally rendered, is a phrase that speaks of the very thing to which I have made reference. It suggests that there was a garment available. It implies that there was time to put the garment on, but this individual did not have on a wedding garment. He deliberately chose something else other than the garment that was provided. And this is made even clearer if you look again at verses 11 and 12. When the king came in to see the guests, he saw there a man which had not on a wedding garment. Circle the word "not" in your minds as we read on into verse 12. And he said unto him, "Friend, how camest thou in hither not having on a wedding garment?" And he was speechless. Notice that second word "not." The first word "not," to which we've already made reference, is a translation of the Greek word "ek," which, when it is used in the fashion described, always represents a rejection of fact. The second word "not" is the translation of the Greek word "may," which, when it is used in the manner described here, represents a rejection of thought. Here was an individual who deliberately considered the matter, thought about it, considered it, and rejected the fact of a garment. Here was an individual who was met by the keeper of the garments and offered a garment, and he said, "No, I will have none of it at all." He refused the wedding garment. You see, we need to keep in mind, as I suggested in one of our other discussions, the custom of the day. This man may have been as poor could be, certainly probably was, in view of the fact that he was among those who were invited from the marketplaces. When the king had said, "Go out and invite anybody you find, since those who were bidden are not interested in coming to the wedding." When he was met at the door, he was met there by the wardrobe keeper, by the keeper of the garments, and he was given a garment to wear. You see, people did not need to dress up for weddings as then as they do now, that is, the guests at the wedding, because they were all provided a garment. The wealthy man, the poor man, they were all provided a garment, and there was really no reason for the man not to have the garment. That's the reason why, as we have just read, when the king of the wedding feast said, "Why don't you have on a garment?" He was speechless. He couldn't say, "I didn't have the proper clothes." There was nothing that he could say. He was absolutely without excuse. Now, this should be applied to our own hearts and to our own lives today. We need to remember that when we stand in the presence of Christ someday, we dare not stand in our own righteousness. We dare not stand in our own goodness. We must stand clothed with the righteousness of Christ. And if, hypothetically speaking, we could stand in the presence of God in the same manner that this man did, we would be as speechless as he. For if we stood in the presence of God some day, claiming our own self-righteousness, as many folk do, God could rebuke us soundly. And of course, the thing that happened to the guest at the wedding is the thing that would happen to every individual who would dare to stand in the presence of God, ignoring God's provision. Yes, we read that this guest was cast into outer darkness, and he was made to go away without one leg to stand on. We'll say more about that in our next study, because we're going to be talking about how God dealt with these people and their responses to his invitation. And time will not permit us to consider it today. We make one final appeal to you in the second or two we have left, and that is, God has provided for you his righteousness, which is yours by simply receiving the Lord Jesus Christ. For the Lord Jesus Christ has been made unto us wisdom, righteousness, and redemption. You can be no more righteous than Christ. Christ is yours today if you will receive him, and I hope you will.